Damaged Goods Podcast.
From third grade.
Oh, so you started back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before I was ever writing or making music or anything, my first foyer into art was painting and drawing.
Right.
And I feel like that opens up a lot of doors.
Yeah,
you know?
It does. Even movies. Movies do that for you.
Oh, I know. I love film. I don't, you know, I don't act, I don't direct, but no. I look at movies just like I look at paintings and books, and I look at the art behind them. That's why I don't really like cheesy blockbuster crap or you know.
Yeah. I'll be frank, I am a sucker for them because, you know, I get to go out to the movies and movies I watch. When I go there with my father and my sister, we see these blockbuster movies like that, Marvel movies and them Star Wars movies and all that other, and the horror movies. You know, they got them Halloween movies I watched just recently last year, and I thought it was okay, but some people had their dying opinion, almost like it was a religious thing.
Yeah, well, I feel like people get very passionate about you know, anything like art, movies, music, and you know, people will die on certain hills and get mad if you don't like this music artist or this movie. Or I'm not very snobby about anything except for movies, not music, not food, but film I am very critical of.
Oh, yeah?
For some reason, yeah, I can't help it.
Oh, okay.
Which is funny because that's the art form I don't do, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah, you know. What movies you've liked recently?
What I liked recently? Oh, well, I've been on the Tubi, so I've been watching all sorts of weird stuff. I've been watching this slasher movie from the 80s. It's called Return to Horror High. I watched that one.
You like a lot of horror movies?
Yeah, I love horror movies.
Do you like the old school, like those
ones? The
older ones,
yes.
Yeah, I feel like the new ones are very predictable and recycled, you know?
I know, it's just... It's old news. Old news bringing that back from the dead. Let it die.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Let it rest. Let it settle. Why you got to bring it back from the dead?
Let it rest. That voice telling you to let it rest is my guest on Damaged Goods Podcast this week. The young man is an artist in the true sense, not just one medium, but he's a visual artist, as we discussed. I became aware of him through writing. He's quite a good writer. And you dabble in a little music and a little other creative things. Mr. Omar King. Not just Omar King, but Mr. Omar King.
Well, thank you.
It's very formal, dude.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Well, I'm married to my work, I'll be frank. That's why I'm Mr.
Well, true artists usually are, right?
Yeah.
Comes committed. First, and then other people and things in your life come second.
Yeah.
And well, it's tough for other people to understand that sometimes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you have a regular, like say you got an office job, or you're a construction worker, or you run a restaurant... Maybe not a restaurant, but you have these other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
People can check out when they're done. But when you're an artist or creative, you're always thinking about it, even if you're not painting, even if you're not writing. It's on your mind, so you never really leave it.
Oh, yes. It's like a ghost and it's haunting you little by little. It just sneaks up on you when you don't even know it. Oh, my golly. And it's an interesting ghost. And sometimes when I don't even know it,
That's a good way to describe it. A ghost haunting you.
It's quite a surprise when they come and haunt me. I ain't afraid, though. I'm just pleased that they come.
See, that was very poetic right there, dude. Because, you know, like, passions, creative passions, they bring you a lot of joy. They allow you to express yourself, you know, go through things, experience stuff. But at the same time, it can be taxing. It can be exhausting. Sometimes it's painful. It's draining, you know. You don't always make money. You don't always get the praise and recognition you want. You get misunderstood. And that's exhausting because you put yourself out there when you paint a picture, write a book, write a song. If you have a nice job making a couple $100,000 a year as a, you know, a salesman or whatever, you're not putting yourself out there personally. You know, you're not vulnerable on the chopping block.
Right.
And I think that's a hard thing for people who don't make art to understand. Like, you put yourself out there. You're very vulnerable. People can criticize you, and you take
absolutely.
It personal because it comes from the heart, usually.
It does. It does. And I've learned to have a thick skin about it, too. It's also nice. Yes, it's also nice to be vulnerable, but also got to learn how to have a thick skin about it, too, because for me, and I'm speaking for myself, is that it's not really great to be in stuck in this, let me put it this way, this moping, I don't know what, there's a word for it, but I call it moping.
Like loathing, self-loathing?
Yeah, like that. And it ain't no way of living. So I say, you know, if that's what they think, so what? Move on.
How did you, how and when did you finally develop that thick skin? Because it's a tough one to get.
Oh, boy. Well, I wouldn't say one solid year, but through the years, little by little, I had to learn. And my God, I had to learn the hard way, and I'm glad I did.
What was the hard way?
The hard way was telling me like it is. Folks telling me, well, you could do better than this. Why is it this way? Harsher. Not the way I'm saying it, but harsher.
Non-constructive criticism.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you don't know about these things, you feel, geez, my God, is it really that bad? My God. But then I thought, well, if it's that bad, then maybe I can improve on something. Or I can improve for myself, not just for them, but for myself to show them, hey, hold on.
That's all good.
I got the words. It just snuck out of me. Oh, my God. Okay. To say, hey, listen. You may think you can be my ghost here and there, but you ain't going to haunt me any longer. Mm. I know these people haunt me, and I let them, and it's a bad way to be put in that situation, these critics and all these other things. Why though? Why don't you take pleasures from your ghosts? Why don't you haunt them? So that's what I'm doing.
So do you feel like through your art, whatever you're creating, you can haunt them, kind of? Yes. Like, let your art live in their head, you know?
Yes.
I feel like people misunderstand what being, you know, being creative and being an artist can be. I feel like you're almost like a natural antagonist in a way. Like, whatever you do, you write, you paint, you make music, it's to provoke a response emotion. It might not be the same one for everybody. And, you know, I might write something that some people like and agree with. Some people get a little upset.
Yes.
But that's the point, you know. And it's a very powerful weapon. Not a weapon, you should say, but, like, it's a lot, you know. You're tapping into their heart. Their emotions.
Yes. And the mediums I use, mainly canvases. I've been told to use canvases to do a correspondent of mine. My job coach Jesse told me you ought to use some canvas to if you want to sell some. Nobody's going to be wanting to sell these cardboard pieces because nobody wants cardboard. I don't know. I've been using cardboard not all my life, but just these couple of years. It's the easy way, and then canvases are way expensive.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, I'd like to make some money out of these things, but nobody wanted them, so I kept them for myself. I still have them at my home, still under my bed. I just have to figure out a way how to, I don't know, dress it up.
Do you find it's hard to part with stuff you've created, like whether something you wrote or like painted?
Sometimes, yeah. Well, just even before coming here, I wanted to bring another piece here. But I liked it so much, I wanted to keep it. So I thought I decided
keep that for yourself.
Yeah. I liked it very much.
I could dig that. Like when I used to draw and paint when I was younger more, like I'd have a couple little things framed. But you know, I'd give them to family and friends as gifts or maybe hang it up at school in like the art room. But some things I was like, nah, I want this one. Because back then you couldn't like copy the things, you know?
Right.
Like it wasn't like you were mass printing. If I write a book or a chapter, a poem, you can have many copies of it. It's fine, you know? But like something you drew or painted, it's like, fuck, I got a one of one, you know? I can't let this go. I love this one too much, you know?
Right.
That's real. So when did you start writing? Because that's how that's how we kind of came in contact.
Oh, yeah, corresponding. Well, that's a good question. It's back in high school days, and I want to say third grade, too. Little by little, it progressed from third grade, going down to the middle school, writing on the notebook and doing putting in the pictures. And then I started doing online writing. I started writing online. I don't know if you heard of this website called the Wattpad website, WATTPAD. Yeah, yeah. Well, I used that one just to write my fantasies, put my imaginations and all my fantasies and my obscurities into page after page after page after page. I don't know, I just wanted somebody to communicate with, something, a medium to paint a picture, a scene, more like bring life into these stories. And that's what I wanted to do.
Like who, any influences when you were younger or even now that kind of helped shape your focus? Yes. Or what
there's
you
wanted one to write writer. There's one writer. I don't want to copy him, but I do take influence. Not so sure if you heard of him, but he wrote the two books. One is Last Exit to Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and the other one is Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah,
you know who he is? It's Mr. Hubert Selby Jr.
Yeah, and I've watched both the movies of those, but I haven't read the books. But for me, like Requiem for a Dream, the movie was like a horror movie for me.
Oh,
that
it was.
Scared the shit out of me so much that, as good as the movie as it is, and I'm sure the book is great, I could never rewatch it because that haunts me more than any Poltergeist Exorcist movie. That shit was visceral to me, you know?
Yes. Addiction can be very frightening.
Yeah. The storyline with the mother and that shit was probably the most shaky for me.
Sarah Goldfarb, yeah. I felt bad. That one scene when she tells her son that she's, you know, a somebody, and it's quite heart-wrenching to tell your own son that she's somebody and that, you know, she's going to be on television.
Yeah,
and that's all because of the delusion. She wanted to be on TV. She just wanted.
She was trapped, not trapped, but she was trapping herself inside watching TV, right? Not really interacting with the world outside. Right. So I feel
recluse.
That was her window to a greater world was the TV, thinking maybe I'm on that thing. Then that's how I'll interact with other people.
Yes. Yeah. And I find that, I take that part of Sarah Goldfarb, and maybe if I take that part of Sarah Goldfarb, maybe others are going through that too, that they find the television as their window, as their other world. I notice that because for myself, I've always been on the TV, I'm always online, all that stuff, because I got nobody to talk to, I got nobody to hang out with, I'll be frank with you. Yes, I do live alone. I got my family, but I love them very much, dearly, I do, but it's a lonely life, I'll be frank with you. It is a lonely life, and I've learned to accept it. I learned to accept if this is my lonely life, then I can make do with it, find my solitude, find pleasure in my solitude, and that's why I do my art in my solitude, because I don't want to end up an addict. That's the thing, and I'm noticing that I'm becoming an addict. Television is addicting.
Yeah.
Online is addicting.
Certainly.
I mean, it is nothing new. It's always been that way. And it's always been that way.
But
you
especially
know
now when you have a smartphone, you have a little computer in your pocket, you can always be online. So that is extremely addictive, you know?
It is. We're slaves to our smartphones. Yeah. We're zombies. And at the end of the day, when you turn that you turn that iPhone, turn the TV off, turn the computer off, all you got is yourself, yourself only, and what you're going to do afterwards, huh?
Yeah.
What is it that you're going to do?
One of my favorite writers, Charles Bukowski, he really liked to be alone and recluse. He kind of hated being around people. Like, you know, he loathed going to work for other people. You know, he would hang out in bars with a few friends, but he was very selective of who he actually liked. You know, maybe a girlfriend here and there, but he liked to be alone in his room, his apartment, and he wrote like that. He found more peace and solace with the music on, writing, not having to deal with people. And as I get older, I like to be around people less, meaning like people I don't know or maybe don't connect with, like large groups. I don't want to be in this restaurant, this bar, this club, this party with people that maybe they're cool, maybe they're not, but I don't know. I don't know. Like sometimes I like a little less. I think when I was younger, I didn't feel as comfortable alone, even though I was still creating. As I get older, I kind of like the peace and solace. you know, like through different things I do or done, you're forced to be around other people, but then you crave some alone time, not just to be creative, but just to like breathe, dude, like, you know, process. Clear your head. Because it's exhausting when you're around other people. You know, I'm taking from them energy-wise, but they're taking from me too, you know?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And I think if you're an artist, you need alone time to really create and be original, so you're not subconsciously influenced by too many other things and other people, or you're not distracted and misled, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's very true about that. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't want to be no sponge. I don't want to be no copycat of others. I want to be, not just want to be, I do, and I am.
Yeah, you are.
And so, therefore, when I do, I am, and I go on. And, right, I don't even want to be stuck in the past that the last few works I've done, I don't want to think about that.
Like the stuff you wrote?
Yeah, that I wrote. I wrote it down. I said what I said.
And that's how you get away. Yeah, that's what all great writers and people say is when you write it down, you're letting it go. Mm-hmm. It's gone. Like, don't hold on to it so much. I got these ideas, this story, but I was, you know, apprehensive about writing and putting it down like it was so special or so personal, some silly reason.
Right.
But put it down. Once it's on the paper, it's gone. And you let those thoughts go, those whether it's a fiction, nonfiction, a poem, get it out and just forget about it, you know, and move on.
Oh, yeah.
It's tough, though. Like, when you write, do you, like, you know, some people, like, they want to always write early in the morning or late at night, or they need like a certain environment,
really,
or they do every day, or only when it hits them inspiration wise. What about you?
It comes without warning. So if I wake up in the morning, I write, or when I get home from work, I write.
Or every day,
no, once in a while, not all the time.
Yeah,
it comes. I naturally. Don't want to force it. Yeah, naturally, I don't want to force it because the writing is just.
It's pure.
It's pure that way.
See, that's the same approach I have, because sometimes I hop out of bed or I'm like walking and I'm like, I got an idea. I got to write these three sentences down on my phone.
Yes.
But there's a lot of writers, you know, people I know or, you know, greats that you hear talk that they'll write almost every day, even if they only do three lines. Like, yes, it's not the best. They do it as like an exercise.
Yes.
And I respect that. But for me, it's like, I don't like to force it, because I get the natural inspiration. I'll write for 8 hours, and then I might not write for weeks.
Right.
And
I'm the same way.
Yeah, and like, I like that. That it feels really natural, and it feels good. And I know that, like Stephen King will say, you know, write every day, or like, you know, Hemingway, like, sit down.
But we're not Stephen King.
Exactly. And like, that might work for them. There's so many different ways to skin a cat, right? That's what's cool about art. You don't have to do the same thing as everybody. And maybe that's healthy for some people, but like, the way I write works. I might not write for a month and a half, and then I'll go crazy for a week, you know?
I know.
I'll get.
I know what you mean.
You know? Like, not to like reference Bukowski again, but he was writing poems and you know, periodicals or whatever for years. And when they wanted his first like novel, which is like sort of nonfiction, he wrote it in like a month.
Oh, well.
And he just like got busy, sat alone, and just did it, you know? And like, that's, you know, you can do that sometimes, you know?
Wow, that's amazing how the mind and the intuition does that.
If you're feeling inspired and motivated, it's like you can't stop.
No. You know? Stop. How can you stop?
Yeah.
It's too good.
Do you ever get like a writer's block or?
Oh, yeah. Who does it?
Well, like, you know, it's tough because sometimes it could go for a while, and to shake that or to get out of that.
Yeah.
Like I'll change up my environment. Like, maybe if I go somewhere, I can like, oh, I'm in a different environment, different place. All right. I can't write right here now. It's throwing me off. Or gotta travel, you know, or like some fucked up shit goes down in your life. That'll cause a strange inspiration to kind of cope with it. But if it's like, you know, things are going good or decent or just average for a while, like nothing, I got nothing to write about, you know?
Right. Oh, my golly.
Yeah.
My golly. Well, yeah, I do get the writer's block, and, it is like a fog you just can't get out of, because you just want to find a way, where am I going, where? It's like, you're almost like that, whatchamacallit, you feel like, oh, there's a movie, well, there's a few movies people play blind people, but there's one, Johnny Belinda. There's the other one, Betty Davis played Dark Victory. She played blind lady. And then there's another movie. There's another movie, I reckon. Ray Charles.
Oh, yeah,
my
yeah.
God, Jimmy he's Fox. Blind, and he made all them great music.
Yeah. true. Like, I guess on the set of that, like, Jamie Foxx would, like, stay, I don't know if it was like a blindfold or whatever, but he would, like, you know, off camera when they weren't shooting, he would, like, stay kind of pretending like he was blind and stay in the, you know, like, character or method acting, you know, like Daniel Day-Lewis. When he did My Left Foot, he would roll around in a wheelchair or, so, you know, to stay in the zone so it looked natural, you know.
Oh, I guess he wanted to wear their shoes, so to speak.
Totally.
They want to be in their shoes.
Get absorbed into the character, so you're not that actor. You're right. That character now, 100%.
Yes.
Yeah. When I get, like, writer's block, I have these, like, little ideas for a story, but I just don't have the will. Mm-hmm. Or the motivation to, like, sit down and like, just do the hard work. Because you know when it comes easy? It comes, like, you know, you're not even really writing. It's just coming out, right?
Right.
And then sometimes, like, I got to work through this. It's like a, you know, like a puzzle. I'm looking at it, like, nah, I got to make a different paragraph down here. Mm-hmm. Different line up here. Like, put it together. I might, like, write different parts of a story and have to piece it together.
Right.
Or you have, like, three lines that I don't know where this is ever going to go. And then I'm writing a chapter half a year later. I'm like, this fits right there, you know? So I always like write. That's how I used to write music. I'll write like little notes. If I just have one good sentence, I'm like, I don't know where this is ever gonna go, but I like it. And then maybe I'm writing a story, and like, this is perfect, you know.
You know, that's interesting because I'm the same way. I got the Google Docs.
Oh yeah.
And I got the Google Docs on the phone.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting, wonderful too. I like it. I like it so much. I pull it up on my break time because I work. I work, and I get early shifts or sometimes mid shifts, and I get two breaks, one break, and so it gives me an opportunity to write, jot down one word after another here and there. Not all the time. I wouldn't want to say consistently, but I have a lot of random ideas like this one story I wrote, an untitled novel, and then another one about a tenant, and then another one about... this one was about the Reddit post I've done. I write a lot of goofy stuff on Reddit.
I find a lot of wild pictures on Reddit. Just wild pictures.
And then another one, I wrote one about a gimp. And I don't know why that idea came to mind, but I wrote it.
When the shit hits you, you just got to grow with it. Like, you don't even have to know why. But just roll with it because it feels natural, you know?
Yes.
And then you could always look at it afterwards and be like, you know what? I don't know. This isn't great. Or like, this is perfect. How did I come up with that, you know? Mm-hmm. Not asking or questioning the inspiration or the creative process because you can always look back after. It's not like you write it live and it's published right away.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And because there's things I write, I'm like, I really like this. And then down the line, I'm like, you know, I don't know. And then sometimes I'm like, why did I do that? Or I won't like something. Like, there was my last book that came out, and I had wrote this poem that I just, I don't know, at the time, I didn't know if I liked it or if it fit, so I didn't, I took it out.
You were unsure about it.
Yeah, I edited it out, and now I look at it, I'm like, I like this, I'm going to put it in my next book, like, fuck, why didn't I put this in? Maybe at the time, it didn't make sense to me, but right now, it not only does it make sense to me, but it feels like it would connect with people in some way, you know? But it's weird like that. I just try, like, not to question it as much as just, it's like a rhythm. Creative shit. It's like a vibe. It's like vibrations.
Yes.
You kind of feel it, you know? I feel like, you know, if you're doing math or science or you're building a house, it's a little more precise.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're writing, painting, playing the guitar, whatever. You're just going with feeling.
Yes.
This feels right. This don't feel right. How do I, like, get in a groove, you know? A flow state, whatever. Yeah.
Yes. But,
so, I don't even know, but how did you... Because you got in contact with me.
Mm-hmm.
How did you find me? And, like, I don't even...
That is a good question.
Because, like, you know, usually...
Yes.
Like, people have as a guest somebody I've met or know or somebody recommends them.
I know.
And when you, like, were, you know, communicate with me, I was like, oh, kind of dig this kid's shit, this dude's shit. It's funny because I thought you were... Like, I didn't see any pictures of you. And just based off, like, your content and stuff, I was like, this guy's probably older than me. But you're like quite young, dude. And I was like, once I found that out, I was even like more. I was like, damn, this dude's kind of good. I like his shit.
Thank you.
Weren't just a writer, but how did we even like start communicating?
Well, that's a very good question. Well, for me, how I got associated with you is somebody posted a picture or a little reel you had. So
somebody else you knew, or just some random person?
I want to say somebody in my feed.
Okay.
It was something in the line, something that you had a post of an innuendo, some innuendo post, and I liked it very much.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so pressed the like button, and then I liked it more, and I saw more stuff that just struck a chord.
Was it like writing stuff, quotes of mine, or like just funny, weird pictures?
Funny, weird pictures.
So like I liked it. You know, social media, you could say what you want about it. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't an artist and didn't have to like sell and promote shit, I probably wouldn't use it, but I use it to, you know, get people into what I do. So, yes. You know, I'll post writing stuff, but I, you know, funny, weird pictures, my kind of whatever dark sense of humor,
oh, yeah.
Which is, you know, all through the art I do, that can like lure some people in. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you maybe read a little something I write. And then that's how I use it to my advantage, you know?
Right.
And like, I used to, you know, host radio shows and stuff like that.
Yes.
Podcast right here. I use all that to kind of maybe attract some people to what I do, like when I write or whatever, you know?
Yes.
That's cool, man. Because, like, to be just fucking, like you would say, to be frank, to keep it honest, I probably wouldn't generally, like, you know, out of nowhere. There's people who contact me asking to be on my podcast. Yeah. Like, usually it's musicians. They want to promote an album.
Yes.
And I'm like, this isn't a FM radio. I'm not here to, you know, like, if I like your shit or if it's interesting, but it's not a radio station. And rarely, if ever, maybe never, you might be the only person where I'm like, I like this kid's shit. Like, I want him to come on the podcast.
I'll be frank with you. I'm one of them people who does that too.
But you didn't ask me. I asked you to come on. You know, because I was like, dude, I like this kid's style. You know.
And I was surprised that I got whatchamacallit. I had a gig or something. This feels like a gig, and I like it very much. I dig it. Like publishing houses, I approach them public presses and small presses, big presses, about, hey, can you read this? Not in that way, but just formally. And yeah, I get it. I get what you mean. You're talking about them people. But then I thought, well, who gives a shit if they going to read my stuff or not? I mean, if they don't want to read it, then there's always self-publishing. Go to Amazon and stuff like that. I don't know how to use it, but I'm learning little by little.
But even, like, just social media, you can expose your shit to other people.
Right.
And it's like a platform you can get people to read, to listen. Yes. Like, you know, if this was 25 years ago, I wouldn't be doing a podcast. I'd have to be on a commercial radio station, right? Then when I, years, you know, decades later, when I had a radio show, it was digital radio, which was like, you know, another thing. And like, you know, big publishers and only big writers used to get their shit out. Now there's smaller publishers that'll, you know, take a chance, and you could have an outlet. Mm-hmm. And you know, there used to be a lot more gatekeepers.
Oh, yeah. And now I noticed
it's a little
that.
More leveled of a playing field, you know?
Absolutely. I know what you mean. I do notice them gatekeepers.
Yeah.
Holding the key and... They wouldn't want to let you in.
Yeah, like my, after I did my first book, for my second book, I was going to kind of like pitch it to some publishers, right? Mm-hmm. Not like maybe the super big ones, because I feel like what I write, I feel like the literary world's a little snobby on a certain level, right?
You know? Absolutely, they sure are. It's some people, but not all.
No, not all, but like, you could be poetic,
right?
You know, sentimental, passionate, whatever. But if you use certain language or whatever, the way I write, I'm trying to target a different demographic. Maybe my age group and younger. Maybe people who don't read a lot. Big publishers like that world, they kind of frown upon some of that.
Yeah.
But there is smaller publishers. There is a niche and a market out there. Mm-hmm. But they might, you know, they look down. It's so silly.
It is.
But there's people out there who want that. You know, there's people who like that shit. You know, and so I was like, all right, I was gonna make like little pitch letters to some of the bigger ones. I wrote them up, and I'm like, I didn't even bother with that. I sent it to a couple smaller ones. You know, but
absolutely. Well, I even had an idea of writing a book. At just writing emails, you know, letters. You write emails and little by little, and I don't know who reads them, and they compile that email and turn it into a book. That's one of my idea of a book, or another idea of a book.
Yeah.
Like, you got your podcast, you got right here, and you got the people you interview or you talk to yourself here, like a schizophrenic, and you can turn that into a book, like an audio book.
Yeah, yeah.
All that you have right now, you can turn that into a book.
Yeah.
You can call it the Damaged Goods Book.
I mean, sometimes when I write, it's almost like you're talking to yourself. Mm-hmm. You may be telling a story for other people, but like the first impulse when I write, it's for me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm talking to myself in my head first, you know?
Oh,
like the
so
poems is for me. And then like, shit, now if the story captivates you or you see something that you like, that's great. But I'm talking to myself, you know? Like, do you ever I have conversations with myself all day. I have fake arguments with a version of or somebody else that doesn't really exist.
Yes.
Or I'll work on like a diatribe or a fucking lecture in my head So if that ever comes up, I've got it prepared for no reason at all. I waste hours of my days like that, you know?
Yes. I'm the same way at work, and they people look at me like I'm nuts.
Yeah.
Nutty.
Yeah.
Crazy eyes.
Yeah.
And I'm talking here, there, spouting every name of the book, even cursing sometimes. Oh, yeah. But I don't want to, you know, be loud, but just a murmur or mutter and stuff like that, because I got nobody to talk to. It's lonely. I mean, it's ironic that I work with people, but it's a very lonely
place. You can be around a lot of people and still feel lonely.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
In general.
Yeah. I mean, I used to live in New York City, and you're on top of each other. There's a million people, but your neighbors are strangers. There's a guy 7 feet away from you, and you'll never exchange words. It's weird. You can be extremely lonely. I actually used to find a lot of peace and anonymity in a big city like that, because you just blend in. A small town, people get in your business. They're nosy. Mm-hmm. They got nothing else to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I either want to be in a city or like in the middle of nowhere, you know?
Yeah. I'd rather be in the prairie.
Like in the woods? In the
somewhere
cottage?
Around that area, yeah.
Yeah.
Have a little Victorian home. That's one of my ideas in my head. I always play. I want to save up enough money to either I build it myself or buy an old Victorian home just to live in. That's one of my ideas. But
I don't have a ton of Victorian homes in California.
No.
Yeah. East Coast, we got those.
Yeah.
So where are you from, Omar King?
Can we,
if you don't mind sharing.
Well, you want me to tell you where I'm from? I'm from Gardena, California.
Yeah. Yes. I've had a few Gardena guests on here before.
Oh, yeah? Well, I need to meet this.
Shout out to my barber, Ronnie McCoy, and a good friend of mine from Boston. Her and her husband, they just moved down there from L.A. recently.
Whoa,
he's an L.A. dude, but they moved down there.
Man, I'd love to meet those people, golly. But, yeah, I'm from there. People say, you don't sound like you're from here. You know, people from there don't even sound like what I do. Are you sure you're from here? Are you certain that you're from here? I am from here. I mean, where else would I be? I got folks from Texas and Virginia, Florida, Massachusetts.
You have like a little southern twang. Oh, Massachusetts. What part of Mass? That's where I'm from. From
Boston, Chelsea.
So. Dude, I have a lot of friends from Chelsea, one of my ex-girlfriends. I mean, I'm from Boston. Chelsea's right there, you know? That's great, dude. Chelsea. Oh, yeah, you mentioned that to me once. Mm-hmm. But, yo, have you been out there recently or not?
No. Sure. It ain't that right, Ronick. It's ironic. I have all these familiars over there, but I've never been there.
I was just back in Boston last week.
I've been to Virginia that one time in 2008.
What part of Virginia?
I want to say North Carolina.
Yeah, you definitely have a little. It's so funny. So like, before we did this podcast, Omar was like, let me call you. We'll talk, right?
Yes.
So I'd only seen like a couple of pictures. This is this younger dude from Gardena, Southern California.
Yes.
And he got on the phone, and at first I was like, is this dude like, you know, fucking with
like,
me?
Like, because
you sound like a 55-year-old Southern dude, but you're younger than me, and you're from SoCal, and it's crazy. It's totally surprising.
It's nutty.
I actually kind of like your voice, your vocal tone, because I think it adds to, like, when you say poetic shit, like you said earlier, I think it adds an air of mystique or what have you. You know what I mean?
Enigmatic. Creepy
person. Yeah, enigmatic. Well said. It's funny. People, like, you know, where you're from, they expect characteristics of that.
Yes,
you know?
They want me to sound like I'm from the beach or something.
And they probably want you to dress and act a certain way. And when you deviate from that, people get upset or disappointed in you, you know?
No, I ain't going to appeal to their little standards, their expectations.
Little bubbles
and
boxes.
I am for what I am. I know what I am.
That makes you stand out more, too.
Yes, and I'm not going to appeal to their standards and expectations and the way they talk, the way they behave, the way they
talk. Because there's a million other dudes or people from Gardena that are just like that. Now you stand out, you know?
You know, I noticed a lot of people dress a lot alike. They do dress alike, and they're like robots.
Yeah,
I don't want to be a toy.
Cookie cutter shit.
No,
yeah.
I don't want to be a toy.
I've always kind of like relished in not trying to stand out, but just not rolling with the fucking stream, you know?
I mean, why should you?
When I was young, though, like, you know, very young, 10, 11, 12, you know, maybe a little getting a little bullied or whatever. And like, I kind of wanted to fit in, to be accepted, but I just wasn't getting that.
I get what you
and,
mean.
And so then I was like, well, fuck it. Then I'm gonna not be part of that group. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna, you know, go on the fringes. I'm gonna skateboard. I'm gonna like listen to this music. I'm gonna dress how I want, because they ain't gonna accept me. No way. Mm-hmm. And as you get older, that uniqueness is an advantage. It's a strength. You're not just another fucking sheep, you know?
Absolutely. I get what you mean about bullying. I've been bullied here and there too. They their school kids call me the retard and the slowpoke at the school, in the middle school. I even remember that remember those few times in middle school when I have to get back home and there would be school kids. Either they would be across the other way, because where I'm walking, I'll be walking from the train track area. It's a long train track, very lengthy. So I'm walking, and I was this little fat kid. I was this fat kid walking here, wobbling. Sometimes I'll be wobbling here. And these kids, these little skinny motherfuckers, they be throwing rocks at me or try to spit at me. Oh, and then I'd be running. I don't know how I had that in me just to run. I ran for my life. I say, go fuck yourself. Yeah. I mean, I didn't say it precisely, but in my head, I just say, go fuck yourself.
Fuck them, dude.
And I ran. I had to run. And now that I see that I've been running all my life, I don't want to run no more. And I don't want to appeal to anybody's standards or anybody's expectation, because I didn't let that change me. I am for what I am. I am for what I am.
You take like a, it's like a pride you take in it.
I do take it for pride.
It's your identity, and you know that you're not, like a lot of kids who pride bullied or whatever like that, they join in on that because they want to fit in with the other bullies, you know? So
they're cowards. Yeah,
so they don't obviously get bullied themselves, but that makes them cool with the other guys bullying, you know? And that's just like, you know, sheep-like mentality, you know?
Yeah.
And those are like weak-minded people. Those are the people that when they get older, they do silly shit like join a fraternity for friends and, like, you know, hold a bunch of dudes' dicks in a dressing room, you know, in a closet, forced to drink alcohol just to make friends with strangers, you know?
Don't you think that's a little gay?
Well, it's just like, it's silly because, like, you know, you want friends. You don't know these people. They're like, yeah, you could be our friend, but only if you drink this gallon of whiskey in a closet. And you're like, that's not my friend to make me do some silly shit. I don't even know. We have nothing in common. Why am I going to do that, you know?
I think that's just a little fruity to me.
It's just, you know, doing shit to make friends out of a strange, weird desperation, and you'll do whatever somebody else says. Like, I feel like when you have a situation like you're describing, or when I was young, I was bullied or whatever, like, and then you're an artist, you're creative, you're more of a loner, or you're unique and you're hanging out with other quote-unquote outcasts. You're very resistant to that fucking, you're not going to comply. You're probably not going to be the kid who joins the military, joins the Wall Street business, joins the fraternity, whatever, because you see that and you're like, nah, I'm not doing shit because you told me to. I think too much for myself.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know what's funny? I would like to mention this. Just like that weekend I had, that Saturday I had at Van Nuys, that Coke Fest venue, I liked it very much. I'll be frank with you. I liked it. It was a decent time. But
tell the people what the event was or whatever.
Well, you want me to tell you? I wrote a long, long, I don't know what you might call it. It's an essay or something.
A vignette.
I wrote something because I wanted to put it. It was in my mind. It was lingering in my mind, and I had to say something. And I don't want it to come out as bitter or come out as, I don't even want to come out as disrespectful. It's just the way it is. It happened. I mean, that's how I feel. That's how I thought. That's what happened there, too. But what happened was I was there. I was selling art pieces there. My job coach, Jesse, he's in a band. Its name is Vivren, V-I-V-R-E-N. That's the band. And they play wonderful music. And other people,
too.
I would say alternative. He, like, independent,
Indie
alternative.
Rock,
there's some punk here and there, too. I noticed that. I liked it. And other people, they do punk rock. And they do lots of alternative music there, too. And my God, what? Everybody was so alive that night, and I liked
it. That's cool.
But what I really didn't like is, I don't know, it's just, I had this one situation, because a lot of people get drunk there. And so I bet someone here and there, too, one person bent tell me, Oh boy, this he told me, my golly, I can get you famous.
Selling
I love
dreams.
Y'all. Yeah. And they was drunk. They were so drunk, and I was straight like that, just standing behind the walls. Like, mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that in L.A., yeah. I feel like.
I didn't want to take those people seriously. Some people, I didn't want to take them seriously. There was one person who followed through. I'm very appreciative of that person who said, yeah, I like your stuff. I like your stuff very much. I would love to see it in a gallery, you know. And I said, okay, all right, I understand you. And what I wanted to do was make sure he followed his word. So the day after that, the next morning, I texted him and stuff like that and asked him, to, you know, are you keeping your word and stuff like that? Not precisely the way I'm wording it out, but, you know, I told him, hey, I enjoy your talk and stuff like that. And he said, yeah, I'd like to do that with you. I would love to have you in a doing. We have an event coming up December 2. And I would love for you to come by and, you know, display your work there. Excuse me.
It's all good. It's all good, brother.
Display your work there. And I said, okay, I understand. I wanted to know if I'm not working that day. So what I did was I put the day off. And my golly, I got the day off requested. So I'm so glad about that.
That's cool.
And then to go back to that night at the bar.
Oh, at Pasadena.
It felt like a bar, yeah. The Van Nuys thing, it felt like a bar, long bar, because they had drinks and tacos a little bit.
It was like a gallery or
no.
Whatever? Oh, okay.
Like think of it as
event space or whatever?
Yeah, like an event space. It's hard to tell because they had a concert. They had tacos and beer and liquor and all that stuff, and then they had these rooms that they were selling art pieces.
That's
and
cool.
Candies and medicinal stuff and all, and jewelry. They
oh,
were
shit.
Selling jewelry, and I there was no space. There weren't no space for me.
Oh, to have your art displayed?
Yeah. So what happened was I just stayed there in a hallway or a little room, just sitting there or standing, and I had my little wall display. It was on a wall, and my sign was on the floor, like tilted. It was tilted this way. And I just waited and waited. I stood there, and I didn't want to leave my post because I didn't know people
course,
might steal
yeah,
and
yeah.
stuff
you,
like that.
I can't
leave. And I just stood there. And that's what I didn't. It was decent. I didn't like it very much, just standing there. But I have to learn, you know, this is the way it's going. It is.
Yeah.
So I cope with it. Eventually, I cope with it. And
that's like, you know, like coming up, whatever. Like, you know, when I used to do music, like some shows you play, there's, you know, 500,000
yes.
people, and it's great. Sometimes it's like 20 people, and the sound man sucks, and, you know, it's just they don't really care about the opening acts. Or,
yes.
you know, when you're writing or you're at a book fair or whatever, there's you know, bigger draws and whatever, and you're not going to get the shine, the attention. But
you, know
you grab a couple people's eyes and ears,
yes,
it snowballs, right? And then next time it snowballs. So, you know, it's you got to do those kind of humbling
yes.
ones.
Yes, that's my first time doing that.
Well, yeah, if that's your first time, that's
yes.
not bad, dude. That's cool. You know, sometimes people expect, like, you know, right away to get the big spotlight and stuff, but
yes.
you got to pay dues. It's tricky.
Yeah, the last time at the bar, I made quite a few bucks
yeah,
there and
cool.
there. I had
that
a good
cool.
time at Pasadena. I liked it very
that's
much.
Cool.
I wanted a lot of people to come over, but I'm glad few people came by. The two people, the people that make movies, Joseph, Joey, and Ella. And yeah. I hope they're listening, that I love their movies. I do. And
like
I enjoy
documentaries
them.
Or?
Oh, no. They make
all
sorts of things. You know, so far I've seen is horror. They have this horror shirt coming out. And I've donated some money. I've donated, not a lot, but just enough. I donated what I can for their project because I believed in it. I even donated another project they were working on. And it hasn't come out. You haven't seen it. But this one I liked very much. I really wish I could have been there when they had that one premiere at Arizona. And they were showcasing it. And I was working that day. And it was my sister's birthday. And then another one. Wait, what? Let me see. They had two. I'm mistaken my sister's birthday. Sorry.
That was all good.
So one, it was on my sister's birthday. And it was at a house party. Then the other one in Arizona was, I think, it was a couple weeks ago. And I was working that day. So I'm mixing those two up. Because, my God, when you're working,
yeah,
you just lose track of the time. I hope I don't get dementia or something. I really don't want to get that.
Nah. I mean, God, dude, sucks. I don't even have dementia, but I have like a shitty memory with some things, like short-term memory, right, either from head injuries or drugs or whatever. Oh, yes. But then certain things I'll remember very detailed forever, you know?
Oh, yes. Interesting enough.
Yeah.
A little interesting fact is before that venue that Saturday, I knocked my head over for getting a box because I was so determined to get a box to put all my pieces. So what happened? A vacuum fell off the back of my head in the shed just because I crawled into it. I crawled into this little, that machine, that treadmill, and I wanted to get the box.
Was it on a treadmill?
Mm-hmm.
So the conveyor belt thing was moving. Oh shit!
It fell on the back of my head, and it didn't hurt that much. I mean, I don't want to fluff anything else. It did sting or something like that, but it didn't hurt long term. But I don't want to do that kind of stuff, put myself in danger. Yeah. But you know what? I noticed that, hey, I'm a determined motherfucker.
There you go, man. I think you have to be if you're an artist. You always hear about, well, not always, but sometimes people have like a head injury or head trauma, mm-hmm. and it could lead to some like wild creative or superpowers. Mm-hmm. That's like more of a movie, but you know, the comedian Sam Kinison, he was hit by a car, mm-hmm. and then like he was a preacher, got hit by a car, then he became this crazy comedian that yells and screams. Roseanne mm-hmm. Barr, like, regardless if you like her or not, she got trauma too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I fell through a drywall, my head went through the wall like 3 mm-hmm. years ago.
Right, right.
On some crazy shit, and I was like, maybe I'll get some superpowers. I got nothing, I just got a fucking huge bump and a bruise and maybe a concussion, but you hear about those kind of things, you know?
There were a couple times as a kid I was so... God, I just was that little movie, you know, Problem Child. I was that kid.
Oh, yeah, dude, John Ritter. I love that shit.
I used to get hit all the time. I fell off fell off shelves, and I even climbed this one shelf that went all the way to the ceiling.
Did the shelves break?
No, I just got, it was slippery. So my hands were all palmy, all clammy like that, and I fell on
That's
the
how
floor.
You learn. Like, I used to want to be Spider-Man when I was young, and I tried to climb shit, and you're 6 years old, and you fall, you realize you ain't Spider-Man.
No.
But, where can people check out some of your writing or your art, Omar King? Geez, Mr. Omar King. I almost feel like you could be Dr. Omar King.
Well, let's see in the future. I'd like to be that. Maya Angelou.
You could also just say it, too. Like, there's like
Dr. King.
Hunter S. Thompson wasn't a doctor, but he would go with the doctor. He'd fake the doctor in front, which I think probably really upsets real doctors because they like to be referred to as doctor something because they, you know, earned or whatever. But, where can people check out some of your works?
Well, I'm like a digital nomad because I'm one place after another.
I like that. Or any websites, blog spots?
There's, blog spot. There's Reddit. There's, I'm in a Discord. Medium. I'm on the, let's see.
What do they look for, Mr. Omar King?
Instagram, that Twitter that you, well, Twitter got extinct. So I'm on that X.
Yeah.
I'm on the YouTube.
What are you on YouTube, or what are you on some of the Reddit, the Medium?
Well,
Omar King? I'm saying, like, what's your name on there, though?
Let's see. Let me pull it up there, too. U/ODQIN00 on the Reddit. And I post just random stuff.
And if you look at the podcast description on this, you'll have Omar's handles and all that stuff. Right. Go to his shit, check it out.
On the Instagram, I post obscure art and film
pictures. I like the
shit
you post, though.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I don't do all that little selfie.
It sucks. I don't like to take. I post other pictures of weird shit, you know.
Yeah, yes, I do. I even take pictures of even this one right here. I've taken this one at my house. It was a belt, and then the wall, and I want to put face on it. I like to do that. That's my niche. That's my little niche there. I put faces on objects, and I want to give them life, so to speak. That's, I guess, my philosophy. Give life to things that
don't have life.
Mm-hmm.
Resurrect, resuscitating.
Yes.
Yeah, man. I like that, dude. Yeah. Poets. Your voice makes all your shit sound so good. Like, you should do an audiobook or whatever. You totally have this, like, older, like, Western dude vibe, like a, some old wise cowboy guy, dude. It's great.
Yes, I do. I've been doing readings for people. One book person. Readings? Oh, no, just little stuff, you know, basically scripts.
Okay.
Acting almost. I've never acted before.
Talk to those filmmaker people. You never know.
This one fella, his name is Rayton Dobney. He does little movies on the YouTube, and he would message me every now and again to read stuff for him, and it would be for roles of obscurities. I even played a baby. I played a child, some child, just my normal voice, but in a child's body. I've played.
That's great.
Recently, I've done something about Vegas, Las Vegas. You know, I think it's her homework. It's his homework. And he wanted a voice. And so, let me see.
Yeah, you'd be great, like voiceover, like cartoons and shit like that.
Oh, I would love to do that. So
we might have to do an animated series together, dude. Okay. You got a great old voice, dude. I swear, like, when I first talked to you on the phone, I was like, is this guy fucking with me?
No.
Which I wouldn't have been mad. It would have been like some Andy Kaufman shit. I was going to be like, this, like, if you, when you came, I was like, and you didn't have that voice, I was going to be like, this kid's a genius. That would have been hilarious. That's very, very dedicated to the art, you know?
No. It's my voice.
You're not going to, like, Kaiser Soze me when you leave, like, walk away talking a different voice?
No.
Fake lip?